You're listening to the Best of the Morning Show podcast. Today's best segments from all 3 hours rolled into one.
Back in the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios, drink White Claw Hard Seltzer. It's the good part of spring and summer, not these allergies that keep kicking my ass. White Claw Hard Seltzer, please drink responsibly. All right, Bob, portal updates, rumor updates. What do you got for me?
Still rumors. Things kind of shook loose. We teased it a little bit yesterday morning, and it shook loose a little bit as the day went on about our guy Igor Milicic. Sounds like he has moved his focus, and likewise with Tennessee, to Igor, that the prospect of him coming to Knoxville seems pretty likely at this point. That said, there's not a formal commitment announcement or anything like that, but it feels like both parties are feeling each other. They seem to like each other. Not entirely sure what the holdup is. It may be tied to, this is just my hunch, you know, the Cade Tyson pursuit. They're kind of similar players, just, you know, kind of a long wing shooting type player. I don't know if, you know, they're looking at it. Maybe they can't have two and one's an odd man out. The Cade Tyson thing, this is just, again, my opinion. It'd be awesome if they get him. I just feel like we're chasing, and I don't know. That's the one I don't have a feeling is going to end up in Knoxville.
Definitely think he's, you know, Tennessee is chasing. I definitely think he's the least likely of the names we've been linked to get, but that's just maybe because I think he's the best player and you're going up against the biggest competition. With North Carolina, you had some names float out too for schools for Awaka yesterday. Villanova, I guess, the new school that he is visiting. Sam, do you find yourself more interested in like Tennessee's pursuit of players or where their two current portal big men end up? Because I'm kind of over Tennessee's pursuit of their roster. Like, I think we know kind of what the names are. We've talked about them. Cade Tyson, Igor, Okparo, you know, from Ohio State, Lanier. I think, unless barring surprise, you're going to get three of those guys, and it feels like the three you're going to get are probably the three not named Cade Tyson. Like, I do think you're going to get the Ohio State / Chattanooga big man. I do think you're going to get Igor. You know, we have talked about it. It seems like that's happening. National basketball media, John Rothstein said Tennessee has emerged as the favorite. That's usually code for like, hey, they're just finishing up some paperwork. And then, yeah, everyone's been talking about Lanier for a month and a half. So, to me, it's kind of the roster's kind of set. Whether or not any big surprises happen, we'll react to it then. But I think I'm more focused just on Adu and Awaka. Where are you at?
Yeah, honestly, I'm kind of right there with you. It does feel like you've got your four targets that you're looking for in the portal, and you know you're not going to get all four, but you know you've got a pretty good feeling about a couple of these kids now. And so I feel like you can kind of start to piece together what those rotations would look like, and I've already done that three or four times now. So, yeah, I do think I'm kind of looking to see where those guys go just in case it's one of those schools that, you know, will kind of piss you off a little bit, I feel like. You know, if you get like a Jonas Adu to a Kentucky or an Arkansas, that'll probably irk me more than, you know, getting an Igor Milicic. I kind of know what I'm getting with a guy like him, but I am excited to – not excited, but maybe just anticipating where guys like Awaka and Adu end up.
Yeah, I don't know what we're getting with Igor. You know, I won't go that far in terms of, you know, I got an idea of the type of player he is, but I don't know how he's going to fit here and what he's going to do. But, you know, that's something you have to wait till the summer or, you know, the fall to really see. Like I said, I think of the four names we're linked to, I feel really good about Tennessee getting three of them. If you told me, you know, Cade Tyson, the Belmont transfer, big-time wing scorer, like if you told me he decided on Tennessee, that would get me pretty excited. Like that gets knocked to the front of the list. But the other three I think are just solid players that are going to be good starters / rotation players here. And like I said, they're kind of a foregone conclusion. Bob, what about you? Where's your level of interest? More with Tennessee's roster and how it fills out, or where Tennessee's two big men transfer end up?
I think I want some closure on the incoming roster, just so peace of mind's not the right word. I'm probably like most fans. I just want to start thinking about the hypotheticals of what the lineup looks like. Because if all these guys come, even if it's three of the four and it's not Cade Tyson, we go from a team that lost four starters to a rebooted roster that's pretty loaded. We talked a little bit about this yesterday, that'd be the next phase, is there's going to be a lot of mouths to feed, even if it's just Igor, Akpara, and Lanier joining D-Stone and the remaining guys that are coming back. So I think that's the case. Adu, for me, is, like I've said before, Adu, for whatever reason, is dead to me, and maybe a contributor to that was kind of how the season ended with him, too. I wish him well, but I'm not too concerned about where he ends up. Maybe I'll feel differently if it is Kentucky or Arkansas or something like that. But Tobe, I had not heard about Villanova. That's an interesting one. That one I'm interested in just because there's been so much reported back and forth. Maybe there really wasn't as much, but the fact that he was out, then maybe in, and then saw him in Phoenix, and, you know, he's just kind of a man of mystery right now.
Yeah, the Villanova one for Uwaka makes a lot of sense. That's one you don't feel like they'd necessarily be breaking the bank for, but, like, hey, that's a proud program, probably a program that wants to get back to winning, that wants some culture guys. Seems hard-nosed. Seems like his type of school. Closer to home. I think that would be a good destination. I don't know if that means the Arizona trip didn't go well, the Arizona visit didn't go well, or if he's just completely playing the field. I don't know. You guys keep mentioning Arkansas. I don't think Arkansas would do anything for me with Jonas. I think Alabama would. Those are the only two schools in the SEC that would bother me, really, at this point that he's linked to.
Yeah.
It is just Kentucky or Alabama. If he goes to Arkansas, I get it. Whatever. Go for it. But those other two would sting.
Now, and the other thing that came up yesterday, and it almost – as a fan, it was almost like off-putting. As much as I'm excited to see what the roster is going to look like, two more names emerged yesterday that just kind of came out of nowhere. This Elijah Hawkins kid, who's a point guard transferring out of Minnesota in the Big Ten. And legitimate point guard. He's good. You know, averaged about almost 10 points a game, 7.5 assists a game. So, you know, if you're thinking about – because it's one thing we really haven't talked much about is who backs up Zakai. I guess that's something to think about. Guy's been playing at a relatively high level, Power 5 conference. And then this other kid, Tucker Anderson from Central Arkansas, and that one, just poking around, sounds like more of a project, a 6'9 kid. His mom's a former Lady Vol, so maybe that might have a tie in here. Some of this might be kind of courtesy conversation that's going on. We just don't know. But those two names just kind of came out of nowhere yesterday.
Okay, so that Tucker Anderson kid is a freshman?
Yeah.
Who was his mom? You know?
I don't have the name in front of me, but she played on the Pat Summit, like, as I understand it, the early 90 teams.
Okay. I didn't see either one of those names yesterday.
Yeah. Actually, Russell, I was listening to his show. That's where I first started hearing it and then started kicking it around and talked with a couple contacts. And they were like, yeah, they're in the conversation, but it's weird that it just kind of came up now.
Well, Tennessee has some scholarships.
Yeah.
Tennessee has some scholarships to give out. So I'm okay if you take a project. I'm okay if you take a backup point guard. I don't know why this Elijah Hawkins guy would want to transfer and be a backup point guard, but maybe just wants to play high-level competitive basketball.
Back to Tucker. His mom is Sheila Frost Anderson.
Okay.
Again, played for some of the NCAA title teams under Pat.
Before my time, not a name I really...
Yeah, nor I.
...really know. I was watching the transfer portal yesterday, and one of my favorite stories came out of football. I love this from the Kyle Ford. who started at USC, transferred to UCLA, and then announced he's going back to USC, and then his announcement was like, my bad, Joel, I was tripping. My fault, I was tripping, hashtag committed. To which I found to be very funny. His graphic just said, I'm back. Like, my bad, guys. I maybe didn't appreciate what I had at USC. I went to UCLA, and boy, was that not fun. Can I come back? I'm sorry. I was tripping. And I've decided the transfer portal is actually good.
That was your takeaway from
yeah,
that?
Yeah, the transfer portal is actually good. It's funny.
If you didn't have that quote, would it be as good?
I don't know, but I have the quote now, and I wish more players take this path. Like when Tyler Barron, he's linked now back in the portal. They had talked about, hey, those Louisville guys are leaving, and they pushed back, but now the Louisville guys may be leaving again. Like if Tyler Barron was like, hey, can I come back to Knoxville? I was tripping. More likely to let him come back. My bad, y'all. You know I was just chasing a bag. I just wanted some money.
Hug it out. Let's get back together. I'm surprised now, you know, I saw that last night too, and I'm surprised more of that doesn't happen between those two schools. I mean, because it's kind of rare. There's, you know, two major colleges in the same town. And, well, I think there's a USC for basketball. I think there's a USC kid that transferred out to go to UCLA once Enfield left. And, I started thinking about it. It's like, God, I guess that's easy enough. It's not like you're really uprooting or anything. You can just kind of bounce back and forth in this day and age between those two schools and just say, yeah, man, sorry, my bad. I was tripping.
You know, I'm a kid. I'm indecisive. I don't know. I had a girlfriend at UCLA. What do you want from me? They're giving me more money. Is he any good? I don't even know if he's any good. I don't know if he's any good.
Can't be. You can't transfer like that and be good.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like he's that good. 2001, 252 yards. 2022, 365 yards. Yeah. Last year, I guess that went from 365 down to 236. Yeah, doesn't seem like he's very good. Corona, California. So he's just a California guy.
Corona?
Yeah.
That's Inland Empire. That's almost in the desert.
So not close to L.A.?
It's L.A. Oh, it's all part of L.A. You know what I mean? It's all considered that, but it's, you know, it's literally an hour outside of L.A.
Gotcha. Yeah. As these guys keep transferring back and forth to rivals, you know, have a little personality when you do it, I guess. But maybe he's not allowed to because he's not very good and he's just trying to get a fifth year of college and who cares. I do think that, you know, I don't know if the NCAA could put anything back in the tube, any of the toothpaste back in the tube. But I will say that, like, my current portal take is that the conferences were probably right when they were like, hey, no transferring inside of your conference. That probably was a pretty good, like, safeguard. I know we got mad about it when we had a couple guys trying to come. Who was the center from Alabama that tried to come, that came to Tennessee as a grad transfer? Brandon, recently? Yeah, was it Brandon something? Played center, came from Alabama. I want to say like maybe Pruitt's first year or so.
Oh, I don't know, man.
And then you had, you know, the Mays brother.
Yeah.
You had him come up from Georgia, and you had to kind of, you know, litigate that. Is it Brandon? Not Brandon Warren. I know that's the tight end that Tennessee was in the mix for like way back in the day from like Florida State that transferred.
Alcoa kid.
Yeah, like that's who I want to keep saying, but I know that's not right. Brandon Stewart's another guy. I know it's not him. I can't think of who the center was. But I do think – I think he got to go because it was a grad transfer. I was like, hey, we got different rules for him, so they didn't get to fight as much. But I do think that was a pretty good safeguard on some of this stuff. If you're trying to work on some guidelines, maybe inside the same conference isn't a bad place to really start. It does feel a little gross when that happens.
It does. Well, Tennessee football's got that Alabama tight end, the transfer. Is it Kitzelman or –
yeah, I can't remember his name either. He's like our fourth tight end.
I don't know if he is. The reports I saw said that he was actually like your best tight end during fall, like during spring camp.
Really?
Yeah, that like, hey, like Holden Stays, the Notre Dame transfer, hasn't really like impressed people, and that the Alabama kid maybe there's something there that they didn't really think of. Now when I Google Alabama center Tennessee, it brings up the Dwayne Brown.
Yeah, the kid that just committed.
Yeah. Yeah.
I couldn't find it either.
Yeah. Never mind. It wasn't that big of a deal. It wasn't that big of a deal. Brandon Kennedy.
Okay.
Brandon Kennedy, I found it. I knew it was a Brandon. Not Stewart. Wasn't Brandon Stewart. Not Miller. Not Brandon Miller. Kennedy. 2018. So yeah, Pruitt's. It's weird that some of the things you retain. Why do I care about that? Why is that still in my brain? Anyways, I got no other thoughts on Tennessee's current setup. Do you, Bob?
No, not in particular. Just, okay. We'll see if we hear any more. Hopefully, we keep saying that each day. Little tidbits hopefully will become real here.
I am kind of tired of waiting. I am tired of being on Igor watch. I am tired of being on these watches. Like I said, just kind of shrug me when something happens. Give me a good shake. Wake me up when something happens.
Maybe you give Barnes the noon ultimatum.
Nah.
One of these days.
Nah, me and Barnes are solid. Friend of the program. I consider him a close personal friend now. And, you know, Elite Eight, SEC Championship. No, Barnes can take his time, do whatever he wants. It's his roster. He's doing a good job of filling him out. You know, I had some problems with some of the style of play, you know, years ago, but those are alleviated too. Me and Barnes are solid. We're friends, and he's a winner.
I do want to get, I hope to get, G-Reg on maybe after all the dust settles.
You know, I love G-Reg, but aim for the top. Just call Rick. Hey, Rick, come on.
I think he might be done once that thing happens.
Yeah, the grind don't stop for G-Reg.
Yeah.
Surprised he hasn't just called in on a new phone. He might not have the new call-in number.
I mean, I could picture bringing it up with Barnes and him saying, man, talk to Polinsky. He's the evaluator, man.
Don't bother me. But, yeah, whenever we get the roster set, you're kind of having an idea of what we have. But I don't know if the team will know what they have. That's the crazy part about this when you're rebuilding your roster and putting your team together. I don't know if you know how the pieces fit. Like, I'd imagine that after the dust settled last year and you had Gainey and Kinect come in, you didn't know what your team was going to look like. You didn't know you were going to build everything around Dalton Kinect, that he was going to be the son of your universe and everything was just going to kind of feed off of it. You wouldn't know that.
Let's talk about that for a second. And, Sam, I remember you, was it maybe Charlie that brought it up. I mean, when Kinect committed, how did you all feel? I was kind of like, oh, okay, interesting. I mean, I didn't feel like, man, we got lightning in a bottle. I'd be surprised if hardly anybody felt that way.
Yeah, I kind of thought we had like a your number one score, but I didn't think it was like, you know, 20, 25, 35, sometimes 40 points a game type guy. Like, I thought it was, you know, maybe a consistent 15 a night guy that you know, that you could go to in some situations, but wasn't going to be like the best player in the country by any means. So, yeah, I mean, I do think that you construct these rosters probably at this time and you still have no idea kind of like which guy is going to be the one to step up at times.
It is nice checking social media and having four people with the Brandon Kennedy stuff. I still had to go through the process of Googling it and finding it, but I'm good at keyword searching, but I found it, but all I do is open my phone and people had found it there for you. But as far as Kinect goes, yeah, like I don't think there's no way anybody knew. Like, you know, Sam, you've talked about you guys being excited about getting him, and I'll buy that you guys thought, hey, this guy could play, could add some outside shooting, but like you said, maybe just a floor stretcher that can score, you know, at times 15 points a game, not be the entire focus of the program. Like, no one knew that. So, like, you know, with all due respect to our boy G-Reg, but when the dust settles, he might not know what they have for next year until they actually get into summer practice and maybe do a little trip somewhere and actually start playing games.
Yeah, and admittedly, I mean, I think about last year, this was probably the first really legitimate transfer portal guy that came in that's I was kind of like, oh, we'll wait and see, just because we haven't had good luck. And in a way, it leads me now to, with the guys coming in now, are the expectations a little unrealistic? Because everybody's, first of all, nobody's going to be Dalton Kinect, but there is a lot of, you know, hey man, I love D-Stone, I think he can bring all these guys, they average double figures, they can all bring that. And it's like, that's a lot to ask, I think.
Yeah, but you hope it just breeds competition. Like, the, yeah. You hope that that's the best part of the transfer portal. I know everyone, you know, Eli Drinkwitz yesterday went on his soapbox, despite getting, I think, 10 of his 22 starters from the transfer portal, went on a tirade about the transfer portal and guys leaving and you know, running away from their problems. And I think that that's kind of the perception of the transfer portal is guys running away from competition. But, like, in reality, man, like, you're signing up for competition too. Like, some of these guys aren't running away from competition. Like, Dalton Kinnett came from Northern Colorado and signed up to come to a program where he was going to have to earn everything and, like, actually, like, step up in competition. Like,
right.
Darlin Stone Dubar, like, could have stayed at Hofstra and scored 20 points a game and done his thing there, but he's, like, stepping up in competition. Like, when you're bringing in four or five transfers, and I think Tennessee is going to be at the point where they're bringing in four or five transfers, like, you hope that just leads to competition everywhere. Competition for these transfers coming in, having to earn things, and competition for your current roster that has to fight for their spots. That, like, hey, sorry, Cam Carr. Sorry, you know, Phillips. Sorry, you know, anybody else that's left over on that roster. Like, you thought maybe you're in line for more minutes, but sorry, you got to earn it this summer.
Sorry, Gainey. Honestly.
Yeah, sorry, Gainey. Like, yeah, like, everything's back up. Like, the only people I feel like are solidified is really Zakai. I would say Meshach's going to have to fight for his minutes, too. Like, Zakai's the only one on this roster that's like, hey, you're locked in as your starter. You're going to get your 34 minutes a game. You're the team leader. Everyone else, man, you're going to have to compete. So I know the perception of the transfer portal is like no competition, people running. But I also think there's a flip side to that where, especially in basketball at these levels, like, you're signing up for, you know, dogfights just for minutes.
One blast from the past, and I only saw this because I follow on X, I follow Indiana State basketball, Indiana State University basketball, and they did a post on Tyreek Key.
The hell is he doing?
He's playing in Belgium, averaging 19 a game. It's good for him, man. I mean, I was just like, oh, my God. I still have kind of that's like a trigger for me. That was hard to watch that year with him. But, yeah, he's apparently balling out in Belgium.
Making some money. Good for him.
Yeah.
Good for him. All right. That's all I got on Tennessee basketball for the time being. We'll keep you updated on what we hear as Knoxville turns days of our basketball lives. We haven't really worked on a name, a good name there yet, Bob.
You got that music yet, Sam?
Let's go to break. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio. During the break, Bob revealed that his wife enjoys the bit of Sam not ever having us music. And warning Sam, warning Bob, you can't make that Sam's personality. You can't start rewarding people for doing bad stuff. You got to be careful. There is a such thing as people do get classically trained, the Pavlov's dog, the positive reinforcement, the negative reinforcement. If all of a sudden you start looking at Sam's shortcomings and laziness of not putting in any intro music, month four, all of a sudden he's going to start thinking it's funny. And we can't have that happen, Bob. So respectfully, tell your wife she has to start demanding more of Sam. I think she's still looking at him as a young kid and finds it funny, but we need him to step it up.
She's a big Sam fan. She's
See? For what reason? He just comes here and doesn't do what we ask him to, says a couple things in the mic.
See, you're propagating the bit, right? Well, there.
No, I'm railing against the bit. Why are people fans of Sam? He comes in here, he'll giggle every now and then, he'll mess up traffic, he'll play the same bumpers 9 days in a row. Everyone loves Sam. I don't get it. Meanwhile, I'm over here working my ass off to get us in and out of these topics, and no one's ever like, hey, fan of John. No, it's always Sam. Sam. And I don't get it.
Job done.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Looking on X right now, I'd like to hear more from Sam. All of a sudden, Sam turns into like this media star as a result of all this.
You know, I was telling you, you got to be careful. That's what I did with Cody. I'm not going to make the same mistake. I ruined one coworker that had potential. I'm not going to let you get ruined too, Sam.
Okay.
Cody used to be a super serious journalist until all of a sudden he made a couple mistakes and people thought it was funny, and then all of a sudden you start getting rewarded for incompetence. It becomes your personality, and every mistake you have, you just get to make a you get to just make it a bit. I'm not gonna let that happen to you. I got higher expectations.
I think you probably helped elevate Marcus, though, didn't you?
Same way, same thing. Marcus, I let him be a bit in terms of him just being the, well, actually, God, you see what the monster I've created? Because I do this whole thing.
Maybe you're the one creating the monsters with the producers, John.
I'm very talented. It's true. I'm very talented, and, you know, my narcissistic tendencies and the way I can kind of rant on a drop of a dime, it does put you in position where I'm the bad guy and you're the good guy. Mm-hmm. So, like, Marcus constantly interrupted me and Cody with the, well, actually, you're trying to debate, and then me yelling. And then us, yeah, and then us yelling at Marcus and him always having to my defense it out. Yeah, that was funny, but now look at what it created. Listen to the G.I. Jake show and ask Jake and ask Brett and Jack if they enjoy the creation of Marcus.
You're basically like creating Frankenstein. You're just the one over here that's...
Well, first of all, Frankenstein was the doctor. I would be Frankenstein in this scenario, Sam.
Sure, sure, you can be Frankenstein.
Frankenstein's monster.
Yeah, you would be the monster in this scenario.
Yeah.
Frankenstein's the actual scientist. Just want to clear that up.
But you're the one. You're still the one doing the dirty deeds over here.
And you know, maybe I'm doing it right now. You never know. Maybe I'm pushing it even further now. You'll never know. Am I actually angry or is it all a bit? Who knows? A lot of times I'm actually angry. A lot of times it's actually just a lot of rage inside of me, to be honest. Sometimes there's a wink wink to it, but sometimes it's just a lot. Most of the time it's just a lot of anger from me, typically. Marcus is probably my most dangerous creation, though.
Easily.
I think with Cody, it just tapped into who he probably actually really was.
Mm-hmm.
With Marcus, I think maybe he was at the point where he was trying to, I don't want to say struggling, but, I mean, he was newer to the radio and maybe trying to find his way, find his lane, and now he's this ultimate contrarian guy.
He's got his own segment on that show.
Mark the Tape, the most controversial segment in fan run radio. I don't know if you've heard
the
intro. I don't know what makes it so controversial. I think at first it was just the controversy was Jake was making Marcus do it and Marcus didn't want to do it. I feel like it's maybe what the controversy was, but it seems like they've settled in. But whenever Marcus is doing his thing, I'm like, this is my fault. I created him. I helped create this persona for him, and he's leaned into it, and now – you know, I have to hear him through the wall as he just gets them rolled up and riled up.
You could shepherd him back into a different role.
You know, I'm excited to see what he's trying to put something together for Thursday night. I don't know if you've been invited to that. I kind of respectfully said, hey, I don't know how late I'll be here. Plus, like, we have to talk about it first thing in the morning, so I don't want to give a lot of my takes. But I was like, hey, I'll swing by. He's wanting to do a draft, like live draft coverage, like a live draft hangout. Yeah.
I told him I would call in.
Okay. I live like 5 minutes away.
Yeah,
so
it's a little harder for me to come out here at night.
Yeah, no, I told him I might swing by around the Titans pick, you know, around pick. You know, I might just watch the whole first 10 picks here, but, you know, just only be on the air doing stuff around the Titans pick.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, he's wanting to do like an app only. Maybe this is what we, you know, get our YouTube video like launched with, or YouTube channel launched with. Maybe we do a live stream there on YouTube as we kind of try to start dabbling into that area. But yeah, Marcus is trying to take some leadership here and actually put it together, and you know, I gotta say, he's been really annoying with it. I've heard him give the same pitch to like five people in a row, like he's telling me in Houston, then he goes and tells Ryan the same thing, he's talking to you, he's just, you know, so what we're gonna do is we're gonna watch the draft, and you know, if you like a certain team, you call in. He gives everybody the same pitch. I'm like, we get it, you hang out, you watch the draft, you talk about it.
I feel like the one part of this that Marcus maybe didn't think through is that most of us are just Titans fans.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, he's like, Bob can call in for the Colts pick, thankfully.
He's like, I texted Rick Butler to see if he wanted to call in for the Cowboys, but he said he was busy. I was like, yeah. And that checks out. No one wants to call in.
Not even sure what time that is, but.
Well, that's what I was trying to tell him. I was like, look, man, I appreciate what you're trying to do. I was like, but just be forewarned. The first round of the draft takes about 3.5 hours. And then meanwhile, intern Jack, they're asking him. He's like, when's the draft? What are they doing the first night? Is they just do one round? And I'm like, Jack, like, you don't know what the hell like is going on in the NFL. But then I put up this TikTok video of Sam and Jack, and it just really pulled the curtain back. that maybe these boys just don't watch the NFL, Bob. You know, I had higher hopes for you, Sam.
That was a bad performance. That was a bad performance.
Honestly, I felt bad because I put up a TikTok. I put up on Twitter, too. So maybe you've seen the video of our Tuesday Top 10 where we are, you know, doing basically PK shootouts with lists. And it's, I call it a Top 10, but that's just kind of alliteration. I might have to change it to like a Tuesday Top 20. I don't know. But yesterday the topic was, you know, first round NFL draft picks or number one overall NFL draft picks of the last 20 years. And it was intern Jack, who's somehow the two-time defending champion in that game, going up against Sam. And I'm like, okay, Sam's an NFL guy. He loves the NFL. He loves the draft. Here he goes. And they go back and forth. And the first, like, you know, four picks, they're nailing them. He pulls Trayvon Walker. And I'm like, okay, I kind of forgot about Trayvon Walker. Good job by you, Sam. And then they get there, and next thing I know, Jack's guessing Derrick Henry and Johnny Manziel. And I'm like, he guesses Tua, Derrick Henry, and Johnny Manziel for his last three picks.
Not to drag Jack through the mud. But
no, drag him. He deserves it.
But, I mean, when I was, you know, we got there with, he took Bryce Young first. I went Trayvon Walker. I was trying to get chronologically in my head.
And then bad strategy for the PK shootout.
Sure.
By the way, you want, if you got a good pull, you want to save that one for the end.
Yeah. But then when I heard Johnny Manziel and Derrick Henry, my brain just turned upside down. Like nothing, it just shut off. Nothing was going into my head. I completely lost.
You started playing.
I started thinking about second round picks, basically.
I hope it lit a fire under your ass, because I hope you're sitting there thinking, man, I can't lose to this guy.
It did.
It's like in Kingpin. I maybe reference Kingpin more than anybody, but when Big Ern McCracken and Bill Murray at the end is like, yeah, there was pressure. I couldn't lose to a guy with a hook for a hand. I had to beat him in bowling. Look at him. That's how you were doing yesterday. You had Jack sitting on the couch with a hook for a hand, and you know what, for brains, as he's like, Tua? No, I know it's not Tua. Derrick Henry? You thought Derrick Henry was the number one overall pick, Jack?
I had a lot of my friends text me and be like, dude, that was terrible. Like, what are you doing?
Bruh, this was sad.
You kind of played to the level of your competition. Yeah. What started happening. Yeah.
Pitiful performance. The show should be ashamed. You're right, Clarence. The show should be ashamed. I am ashamed to be associated with Sam.
I'm pretty ashamed, honestly, myself.
Man, this is sad. Jesus Christ, this was embarrassing. Those are just some of the comments on the TikTok, to which I hope it's lit a fire under you, Sam. We talk about these kids, the transfer portal, and competition. You know, I hope it lights a fire under you to just become a list champion.
I tweeted it yesterday. I tweeted it out yesterday.
So really, what
I took accountability.
You need to come into this draft get together with Marcus and just dominate. Speaking of which, Marcus, not that I would go, but Marcus didn't check in with me at all. Says a lot.
Maybe he knows that you wouldn't be a part of it. Although every time, Bob, every time I pop on Twitter, I see that you're hanging out in a Spaces. So, like, I do feel like you're a content guy. Like, I feel like you consume and you're all about them. I see you over on the West Coast. I see you here locally. Just, you're a Spaces guy.
I guess.
Maybe if Marcus would ask, you would hop on. It seems like you would join.
Well, maybe
if it's on Spaces.
If it was on Spaces, yeah, maybe.
Call on the phone. Yeah. You can phone in. But, yeah, I say all that to say, like, tomorrow we're going to experiment with some off-the-air content. Not necessarily full-fledged voluntary reaction, but that type of vibe, a hangout. Marcus is leading the charge there. So if you want some NFL draft coverage and you want to talk about your team's picks and hang out, make plans to do that. I think they're going live just at 8 o'clock after overtime concludes. I know some of the overtime guys are going to hang around at the beginning. I plan on being here to watch, like I said, the first 10 picks or so.
The overtime guys will be a good fit for that type of thing, too.
I guess so. You know, yeah. I hope so. I don't know what – when you say a type of fit, I don't know how Marcus is going to handle it. Like, I keep telling him, like, hey, you're overproducing it.
Is there going to be, like, cosplayers? You know, happening there?
He definitely seems like a cosplayer. You could see him down. Have you ever seen the movie Role Models? Like, you know, they're in there fighting and doing that whole thing, and they're dressed up like warriors and kings and stuff. I could see Marcus down there at the medieval cosplay for sure.
Well, then I'm in.
That's all I took. Now Bob is in. Yeah, like, I could see Marcus doing that. But, like, I'm like, Marcus, just make it like a casual hangout where you talk some ball. Don't start stressing, lining up all this stuff. Just hang out. It'll be fun.
He's recreating the draft room.
He's trying to.
Like a whole different – his idea of a war room, again, might be medieval, you know, people with
– It's true.
night costumes on.
No, he was talking about we're going to give our letter grades and our instant analysis. I'm like, okay, I guess. Just hang out and laugh at some picks.
That's what he should call it, the fan run war room.
Not a bad. It could be a new. We'll fire it back up for the NBA in a couple. We missed our chance with the WNBA draft. We should have been there for that. Draft room. The draft war room is a pretty good idea. So yeah, make plans to do that tomorrow, and we'll probably try streaming on YouTube and put it up podcast form and everything. But Marcus is taking the ball there, so that's the new evolution of Marcus. We'll see how it goes. Hour one in the books. We'll kick off hour two with some headlines from yesterday. We'll talk some NFL draft. We'll talk some NBA playoffs. Still got some stuff to talk about. Stick with us.
You mentioned earlier that I'm a space's hopper. And I don't know why it made me think of it when I heard this song with the artificially high-pitched voice, but I was monitoring a Spaces that was talking about transfer portal stuff the other night, and they had this guy on. He was really a kid that was a FAU insider.
Why are you in this space, Bob?
Well, I don't know. But let me finish, and then we'll get on with the rest of the show. I thought about this yesterday. This dude, if you go look him up, his name's JJ Metz, Metz. He is the youngest college basketball insider out there. He is a kid. I bet you he's like 12 years old. And he was good. He was actually pretty good. He was on this Spaces talking. He's talking ball.
Don't end up on a list out here, Bob, listening to minors on the internet. Be careful.
No. It was there were a lot of other adults on there, and they were saying, hey, man, you know, everybody kind of rolled their eyes at first when they heard you were coming on, but you got great insight, and it's just freaky. Something I would have never expected.
Now, what's this kid's name again?
JJ Metz, Metz.
Sam, make a note of that in case, you know, in the summer when Bob starts, you know, really scraping the bottom of the barrel for guests when we're trying to plan shows.
Yeah,
I got this JJ guy coming on. Trust me, he's solid.
We're going to talk FAU basketball.
Yeah, he's solid. Trust me.
Can only get on for 15 minutes before his babysitter's got to pick him up.
Oh, Sam, that's good. That's good.
The segment's brought to you by Knoxville Smiles. Don't put off your dental visits any longer. The folks over at Knoxville Smiles want to help you when it comes to your dental health. From routine dental cleanings to teeth removal, restorative procedures such as fillings, crowns, bridges, Invisalign, veneers, implants, they can do it all. If you got teeth, they can help. If you don't have teeth, they can probably help you there too. Contact Knoxville Smiles today at 865-539-1776 to set up an appointment. You can take a virtual tour of their state-of-the-art West Knoxville facility at KnoxvilleSmiles.com. KnoxvilleSmiles.com. I smiled a little bit yesterday seeing Derek Dooley be college football's main character on one of these days, as he is talking about apparently bringing some private equity money in and saying to hell with the college football national championship playoff as it's construed. Says, guys, come on, what are we doing? Let's be a little bit proactive instead of reactive. They're going to leave us. They're going to kick us out. Let's leave them before they kick us out. Let's do our own Group 5 playoff.
Yeah, I almost dismissed it just because it was Derek Dooley. But the more I read about it, it's kind of an interesting concept. I think the question will be, we were talking about during the break, is it somehow interwoven into the college football playoff as we know it, or is it a standalone thing? It doesn't fully specify that. It seems to me that the CFP with their Power Five and their plan would probably not be interested in trying to accommodate this. That would be my opinion. So then if it's a standalone, can it really be something that generates revenue? I mean, we know in this day and age, from a media perspective, TV networks want content, and, you know, I guess it would be more content. But, you know, great quote came from a former Fox Sports executive who is a media consultant today, and he said, you know, if somebody came back to me and asked me to invest in this, my question would be, how do I get my money back? He said, how do I make more than I can in buying AAA corporate bonds at 9% a day rather than invest in a game of rice against Texas State?
Yeah, maybe from that perspective, it's not going to make a lot of sense. But you know what my reply to that would be? Saudi money, live, golf. Like, they're not worried about getting a return on investment. They're just worried about you liking them and letting them do their thing and thinking of them as, hey, that's the country that loves sports versus, you know, some of the other stuff that you might think of them for. That's my response to that. Not necessarily, hey, let's build this and turn a profit as much as it is, hey, let's build this, let's get some money behind it to make it feel like a bigger deal, because, you know, the SEC and Big Ten is squeezing us to death when it comes to,
yeah,
you know, the college football expanded playoff.
Yeah, there's definitely some of that in terms of the conventional wisdom is more and more this is just going to become a Big Ten SEC game eventually. We hear that kind of conversation all the time. We all talk about it as fans about why don't they just go and create two super leagues like AFC, NFC, and, you know, separate from the rest of the pack. So yeah, I could see that. When you mentioned live, I couldn't help but think maybe the games are three quarters instead of four. Sam, you with me? You follow me?
I'm all in on that.
Yeah.
Good one, guys. Nailed it. Sam, you're a college sports freak. Your thoughts on the potential Group 5 standalone playoff?
I think it's honestly a pretty good idea.
I concur.
I think that, you know, like with just the current landscape of where football is starting to go, and it's basically just two conferences with the SEC and the Big Ten, it just kind of feels like they started off this playoff idea of like bringing in one of these Power Five or Group of Five teams to have a shot. But, you know, everyone is turning on this game and is realizing that these teams are quickly outmatched, and it's a game for maybe two drives or something like that. And so I think you'll breed some competition within the Group of Fives, and you know, I just think you'll have healthier competition for that. And, you know, I guess maybe some sickos like me, you'll get some engagement in terms of that sense.
Well, it seems like the gulf is only getting wider.
Yeah.
Because the teams that had a chance to build programs became Power Five schools themselves. Like, you could have convinced me that UCF could have morphed into an actual, like, power threat in the current college football or the new slash current, I guess, now that we're in 2024 playoff format, where like UCF becomes a mainstay in the college football playoff, and that they have, you know, such a big enrollment down in Florida that they maybe could win a game in the actual playoff. But that what happened to them in Cincinnati is that they became Power Five schools. Cincinnati and UCF both got the call up to the Big 12, which now we're left with what? Like, who are our best Group Five schools now? Memphis? FAU? I mean, I don't even know.
Tulane,
like,
something like,
yeah,
that.
Yeah, like Tulane. Okay, Tulane has, I guess, taken that. James Madison was that this year, maybe. Like, but who knows how they're going to be. But, like, point being, the quality of the Group Five has gotten shrunk already. That gap's only going to get wider with this TV money, which I think is what Derek Dooley's looking at with the college football playoff and the revenue distribution. Says, look, we're getting squeezed out. Let's just try to have our own thing to sell. To which, ask the question, would you rather be a Group 5 school that gets a ceremonial playoff invite that leads you to get slaughtered, or would you rather say, like, hey, we're the Group 5 champion?
I think definitely the Group 5 champion.
I think so, too.
For, like, recruiting and stuff like that?
I think so, too.
So in your mind, you guys are framing it like it would be a total standalone thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's interesting.
And I don't know if that requires them to forfeit their spot in the playoff or how that works. Maybe they put it on earlier and the winner gets the playoff spot. I don't know how they would want to do it. I don't know.
I actually think
it's too many games probably when you get to that point of like a playoff versus, you know, then get you into the actual playoff. All of a sudden you're asking these Group 5 kids to play like 18, 20 games.
I'm so sucked into the idea of relegation in football. I'd love for just like the champion of the group five to get promoted and like the worst record in power five to go down.
We'll still at some point, that could be a whole special conversation, that proposed Super League thing, because I agree. I like that part of it too. I think if the college football playoffs, if this group of five thing happened, I think they'd be like, have at it. It's fine by us. I don't think it'd bother them in the slightest.
No, I don't think it should. And if you're college football, I don't think you should be mad at it. I think you should be like, hey, this is probably an event that people are more likely going to watch, because people want to watch football and people want to watch games with stakes.
Yeah.
So, if you call it a playoff game and you put it on and it's D1, because I'll be honest, I don't really watch the FCS playoffs when they're on. But, I even think the Group 5 is going to be so much better than those FCS teams on average, the quality of player at least. Maybe not the teams, but, the level of athlete.
So let me ask you this. If it's hard to compare it right now because they're different seasons, this presumably would be in the same season.
I would imagine so, yeah.
Calendar season. So if you had the NFL and this UFL both playing at the same time, would you have any interest in UFL at all?
I've watched a couple UFL games, to be honest. I like watching the Birmingham Stallions the kickers. Man, the kickers in the UFL bombing those kicks. I think I would probably watch it over the Group 5, but maybe not. I don't know. I can't call it.
I'm talking about NFL, though, if you're comparing the two. My point is...
Oh, UFL versus NFL. Sorry.
Yeah.
I thought you were saying UFL versus this Group 5 playoff. No. Sorry. No.
That's the thing I would worry about if I were athletic directors at these schools. It's like, I guess the money might be enticing enough, and the fact that it could help recruiting, like you said, but it's like, man, we're still just going to be lost in the shuffle if it's in the same season.
I don't know. If you told me the UFL was playing on Wednesday nights, Thursday nights, or maybe Friday nights or whatever. I mean, not Thursday night, because NFL football is going to be on Thursday night. If you told me it was on the days of the week where the NFL wasn't, maybe I'll have it on in the background, maybe, because I'd be in football mode.
I think it'd have to be something radical like that. You know what I mean?
That's kind of what the Group 5 already does, right, with the Maction and the midweek games. They kind of already do that because they know, hey, we can't compete on Saturdays when we're looking for, a national audience. They kind of already know that.
Right.
The private equity money is the part of this that I don't necessarily understand. So, what do you think they mean by it, Bob? Just taking private money to fund and pay out the schools, to pay for the schools to do this tournament, to help find sponsors? What do they mean by trying to bring in private equity money into this thing?
I would assume there'd have to be some, conference governance. They'd have to invest in creating a structure. So that'd be one thing. That's not a ton of money, but that would be money. Again, it's probably about being self-sustaining or self-sufficient until they can lock in a media deal, because the media deals would be so they'd be tough. They'd have to extricate. A lot of those schools already have existing deals with, most instances, it's ESPN or CBS Sports Network. But I think they are probably part and parcel to what they're trying to negotiate for a college football playoff contract too. It complicates all of that. So I would think some of that money is to just get lift off and make sure that it can survive at the beginning.
Now correct me if I'm wrong, but the promotion and relegation system that the Super League is proposing doesn't really have any of these Group 5 teams in it, right? Like this kind of, I know there's a couple, but it's not the entire country, right? It's only 70 to 80 teams. Not 135 or whatever the number is currently. Not everybody has a chance to get promoted, right? It's just certain schools get invited, Oregon State gets the, and Washington State, those type of schools. And it's not like the Rices of the world aren't getting to get promoted.
Right now, my understanding of it was there were 8 divisions, 7 of them are pretty much locked in with the Power 5 conferences, and then the 8th one is, they called it under division, mm-hmm. and that's the one that has the promotion and relegation.
Right, but the schools that are in that, do we remember which ones they were?
Boise, James Madison, Liberty, Miami of Ohio, New Mexico State, Toledo, Troy, Tulane, UNLV, and UTSA.
Are those just the top 10?
That's like a starting point, right?
Yeah. Right, but did they just take that, like, say, like, hey, this is the current top 10 in the rankings? Like, if you do the polls, or I don't know how they got those 10.
Has to be, because New Mexico State just kind of came out of nowhere. Okay. And they've had a couple good seasons, so.
It's kind of crazy Memphis isn't on there, right?
Correct.
It's kind of crazy that they wouldn't be included in that 10, but when I just think of the 10 biggest Group 5 programs, like, you would think they'd be on there. So, like, yeah. So, if you take those, like, there's still these 50 teams left over that are not going to matter at all. So, if you're Derek Dooley and you're probably coming to the realization that you're just going to kind of be stuck at that level, that maybe you could be a good coach at that level or be an impactful guy at that level, where is he at currently? Why is he the one talking about this?
I was just thinking the same thing. I thought he was – wasn't he with Alabama or
– I don't know what he's doing.
Yeah.
I don't know what he's doing. I know, obviously, he had his time at Louisiana Tech and was an AD, so maybe he's like, hey, I care about this.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, he's a – we'd heard all those stories back in the UT days. He's a detailed guy, so, I mean, he – you know, I could see him working hard to figure something out here.
And like people forget he was a lawyer.
Yeah, like you guys said, I actually think it's an interesting idea. I just think there's still a lot of questions that I have of how would it actually work, but – you know, they're just in the preliminary stages talking about it, right?
But I will say that we don't usually use the words positively together, NCAA and proactive. Usually everything in that sport is so reactive and late.
Right.
I do give Dooley credit for trying to do something before the – before the shoe, you know, drops, before the writing on the wall becomes Sharpie. Just going ahead. Like, right now, it's just kind of, you can barely see it. It's kind of faded on the wall. Yeah, before the black light comes out and you see what all's on there. Like, Dooley's trying to say, hey, let's have a plan and let's try to survive. Because me personally, right now, as it's construed, I wouldn't really care if all those schools disappeared.
Yeah.
I wouldn't care at all. I don't know where I'm at when it comes to your average football fan. I don't have time for those other schools. No thanks. But if they create a product that maybe I enjoy watching, maybe they become relevant. Any other thoughts on this, Sam?
Just think it's I think it could also, you know, create some positive movement, I think, maybe in the transfer portal, because it gives some guys maybe a little bit more of a platform to kind of, you know, throw yourself out there, get some good tape against another quality Group 5 opponent. I think you'll start to see some of that pipeline. You know, you get some more talented Group 5 players that are, you know, get on the radar of some of those big Power 5 schools and stuff like that.
So yeah, you're saying they would just use this as a TV product to then be recruited to a bigger school?
Basically.
Kind of like the UFL and NFL, which, I mean, again, that's what it is.
But that's like the way that college sports are going these
days. No, I know, but like, if I'm the Group 5, like, maybe just lean into it, man. Like, yeah. Hey, we'll put you on TV. We'll help you get to a better spot. Come here and play for a year or so. Now, in football, it's different than basketball because, you know, freshmen and sophomores aren't going to be as good on average as your basketball freshmen and sophomores, I don't think, at least physically. But, yeah, just like lean into, like, hey, we're not actually – power football. We know that, but we're okay with it. Because so many times it feels like those schools are trying to pretend like they are.
It's kind of like JUCO baseball almost. Like, JUCO baseball is a respectable product in the JUCO sense, but, like, you know, you still got to cut your teeth in that to go then get to the power levels. But when, you know, when you've got a nice little product there with all those schools put together, I think you can kind of propel yourself up to those Power 5 levels.
It's an interesting analogy. There's a lot of major league players that have gone that route and mm-hmm. don't play at the big power schools.
Yeah, I was almost even going to say, like, I think the JUCO baseball players are just much better, like, on average. But the comparison's still there. Because there's plenty of guys that probably could have been – played at a D1 level, but just either couldn't make the grades or didn't want to make the three-year commitment that are trying to stay open there.
I mean, not even – yeah, and beyond the JUCO levels, like, you know, I'm thinking of, like, J.D. Martinez, for example, played at, like, Nova Southeastern. You know, it's a four-year school, but, you know, nowhere on the radar in terms of, you know, notoriety, but produced a really good professional player.
good chat, good discussion. Good job, Derek Dooley.
Derek Dooley is now in the morning show conversation.
He's back, baby.
Who'd have thunk it?
He's back. Let's go to break. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio. And three. We're talking some NFL drafts. Let's look at it from a Titans perspective. Let's bring on Easton Freeze, Broadway Sports, covering all thing Tennessee. Easton, top of the morning to you. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, fellas. Thanks for having me on.
What's the vibe like right now inside of Easton's head? You've been waiting for the draft. You've been working for this. You've been scouting. You've been looking at what the Titans need. You're almost to the finish line. How are you feeling?
The vibe is I'm tired, and the vibe is I'm nervous, and the vibe is I'm excited because this is the most chaotic potential, especially in the first round for a draft that I can remember. And the Titans in particular are in a very advantageous position to land a strong tackle or a strong wide receiver, potentially trade back and really shuffle the deck in the first round. They could do a number of things that would be exciting, and I think it's going to be a good time on Thursday night.
They're not in complete control of the draft in terms of the swing positions, but like they are kind of right there in that sweet spot where teams might start getting desperate and maybe things fall perfectly for them and they can get their top prospect, or maybe they have to even move up a couple spots. They are in an interesting position, like you said. Who do you want the Titans to draft? Who do you think their best pick would be? Is it Joe Alt? Is it a wide receiver? Because Tennessee has struggled with both in the recent years.
I am firmly of the mind that they need to land a top offensive tackle just because of the way that the offensive tackle position works in the NFL. Historically speaking, the talent drops off precipitously after the first round, and this year's group in particular has six incredibly strong prospects that are all going to be first-round picks. The Titans are in position to have their pick of the best or second-best, I'd imagine, of them should they stay at seven. Now, if I had my druthers, I would have them moving back, gathering some extra day two capital. They don't have a third round pick this year. They sure could use one, and taking advantage of this deep tackle pool. I think all six of the top six guys are valuable and would be, arguably tackle one in any other class. And so if they could move back to 11, 12, 13, especially if a quarterback falls to seven and they could have one of those quarterback needy teams like the Vikings or the Broncos or the Raiders bite and come up for that guy, I think moving back and drafting a tackle would be ideal, but taking one of seven certainly wouldn't be a bad thing.
So you see the six linemen that are projected in the first round to all, I don't want to say it be interchangeable, but not a wide gap between them?
I think it's a really narrow gap. Yeah, the top of the class is, of course, Joe Alt, who I think is the number one tackle in this class, just the most well-rounded guy, in my opinion, out of Notre Dame. There's a really thin margin in my mind between him and Fashanu out of Penn State. Fashanu is the best pass protector with a bullet, but he lacks a lot in the run blocking game. And then third, also a thin margin, is J.C. Latham out of Alabama. Mountain of a man, the strongest player in this draft. He plays right tackle, but I think he has left right side versatility, and he moves like a man that's much lighter than he is. So Alt, Fashanu, Latham are the top three for me. And then there's a small gap, and you get to guys like Talisa Fuaga out of Oregon State, who's the best run blocker in this class with a bullet, but is a little bit lacking in the pass protection game. Troy Fontenot out of Washington, who I think is the most underrated of the bunch. He's not got anything in particular that's super sexy about his game, but he's just a B+, A- across the board. Looks like a pro on tape. And then Amarius Mims is the wild card out of Georgia. He'll probably be the sixth of the six off the board just because he only had eight starts in college. A lot of people call him raw. I think he's more inexperienced than he is raw. He's built in a lab to play tackle. Incredible size, incredible height, incredible length. If he can stay healthy, he may very well in 3 years, we look back and say, Amarius Mims, wow, he was the sixth guy off the board, and he was the best tackle in this class. But all six of those guys are really fantastic, and I'd imagine all of them go in the top 25 picks.
Easton, thanks for joining us this morning. The question I would have, and it feels like a long shot the more and more I look at this stuff, but in the event that something happens, it's a bit of a curveball, and there's actually somebody that picks, we'll say the Giants, picks ahead of the Titans, and they take Joe Alt.
Right.
What do you think the Titans' strategy is at that point? Do they stay kind of quote-unquote on brand for the position need that they're looking for, or do they just go at that point after the best available talent that's, you know, right now maybe projected in front of Alt?
Right. So we spoke with Titans brass yesterday in their pre-draft press conference, and we asked them if there were any players on their board that were untrade-backable, right? Guys that if they were there, they would not consider trading back from. And they said the short answer was yes. That's all that Rand Carthen gave on that front. I have it on decent authority that they really, really, really want to trade back no matter what, unless that guy or guys, if there's more than one of them, is there for them. We had it come out this morning from Diana Russini talking about how they really fell in love with Marvin Harrison Jr. out of Ohio State, the top wide receiver in this class during the combine process. Not shocking they fell in love with the consensus wide receiver one, but I'd imagine he is one of, if not the only guy on that list of guys they would not trade down from. So that being said, even if Alt is there at seven, I think their priorities look like that guy and Marvin Harrison Jr., if he happens to somehow fall there, and then trading down. I think that's what they want to do, even if Alt is there. Now, if they can't find a partner because you got to have somebody to dance with to move in the draft, it's going to depend on what receivers are there. I think they like Malik Nabers out of LSU a lot. I think he presents a really fantastic fit for them. So if he is there and Alt is not, it would not shock me if he's the pick at all. There's other guys to consider, such as Ramadunze out of Washington, who's my pick for the second best receiver in this class, but his skill set might be a little bit redundant with some of the guys they have on the team already. So it's a good question. It would not shock me at all if their second tackle is actually J.C. Latham out of Alabama. Bill Callahan, the son of Brian Callahan, offensive line guru, the Titans' new offensive line coach, he spent a lot of time in this pre-draft process with Latham at his pro day. They had him in to visit. He's the kind of guy from a profile standpoint, Latham is, that fits the historical profile of the tackle prospect that Bill Callahan likes a lot. So it wouldn't shock me if he actually was the pick over a Fashanu at seven if they stuck there and took a tackle.
Easton, what did you make of Rand's comments yesterday that he's viewing this as his first draft?
I think it's kind of a throwaway statement. Honestly, I know a lot of people want to make more of it than I do because it's easy to say, what does that say about Mike Vrabel and what does that say about the way that he was treated last year and the power that he had? I really didn't take it to mean that. I think that was more alluding to the fact that, you know, your first draft, you're kind of figuring it out all as you go. There's no handbook to being an NFL GM, and there's no handbook to the draft process. It's about working your contacts. It's about knowing the game, and you can't know it till you do it. So that's kind of how I took it, that he was last year figuring it out as he went, and this year he was able to go into it knowing exactly what he wanted to do, when, where, and why.
Easton, you know, the whole talk in this offseason for the Titans has been, you know, shoring up that offensive line, trying to get a tackle, and then trying to get some weapons on the outside for Will Levis. They obviously go out and do that in free agency with Ridley. And it feels like this coaching staff and Callahan still want to get some playmakers on that outside. But outside of those two positions, what do you feel like kind of is that third biggest need for this Tennessee team in the draft coming up? And then, you know, without that third round pick, kind of where do you think that this team, where is that strategy, do you think, in terms of that third pick that you're taking outside of an offensive lineman or a wide receiver on the outside?
So the third biggest need, just purely in terms of, you know, they don't have a guy on the roster and they need one, it's inside linebacker. Now, you could easily argue that in terms of positional value and impact on the field, it's maybe edge or defensive line, but it's one of those three. It's that upfront triangle on the defense. It's one of the linebackers or one of the guys up front, either on the inside or the outside. You ask what their strategy could be without that third round pick. The answer is they're going to be going into the season without somebody that they really need. Like there, I don't see a world, you know, you go through the mock drafts. I've run the numbers on this. There really is not a world, unless they hit it really big a couple of times in the late rounds with some gems that they find, where they go into the season without a significant hole or two if they don't add any day two capital. And that's a big part of the reason why I am so strongly in favor of them managing to find some more capital, trading back, doing what it takes to get another pick in the top 100 to add to the two that they already have. So I do think that the second round pick, regardless of what they do in the first, whether it's receiver or tackle, there's a very high likelihood that they are interested in one of the defenders there, one of the edge rushers, one of the defensive linemen. I think Junior Colson out of Michigan, if they were to go linebacker in the second at the 38th pick, I think Junior Colson is my pick for that. They had a meeting with him. He is a Nashville native, went to Ravenwood High School just down the road over here. Really strong linebacker. He's my best linebacker in this class. He does everything really well. It's a really weak linebacker class as well. There's really only three or four guys that imagine on each team's board that they would see as draftable starters, draftable green dot guys, and that's what the Titans really, really need right now. They brought in Kenneth Murray from the Chargers in the offseason. He's a downhill, heat-seeking missile-style linebacker who's going to be primarily working in run fits and rushing the passer. He's not going to be trusted in coverage, and you need a guy that can be the quarterback of the defense, can wear the green dot, can call the plays, and can fall into coverage reliably. Junior Colson is one of the only guys in this class that can do that.
Sticking with the linebackers there just quickly, can you talk a little bit about Peyton Wilson out of NC State? Obviously, he's got a ton of injury history, and that, you know, that's mm-hmm. obviously something that you're going to look for in that draft process. But that's a guy who, you know, when he is healthy, and he's been healthy the last year or so for that NC State team, he flies around on the field. And, you know, guys like Luke Kuechly and other big-time linebackers have spoken highly of him. What are your opinions on him and, you know, in his health, I guess?
Man, Peyton Wilson's such an interesting case, because you're right that he's fantastic when he's healthy, at least in college he was. And you could easily argue he is the strongest cover linebacker in this class, again, when he's out there on the field and when he's healthy. He's got an interesting frame that I'm curious to see how that's going to translate to the NFL. 91st percentile height, he's 6'4", but 6th percentile arm length. And folks will be like, well, does that really matter? At the NFL level, when you're going to be a linebacker trying to run fit and get after the passer and match hands with a blocker, you know, yes, he's a fantastic cover linebacker, but you're going to be asked to do a lot of that as an inside linebacker, and he's going to be at a length disadvantage on every single block that he goes up against. Now, he was a lot of the time in college too, and that wasn't a huge issue. So, because there's not a huge precedent for a guy that's built like that at the NFL level, I'm not saying he can't do it, but I am interested to see how it translates and how a team chooses to use him. That being said, the health situation, I know he has been healthy for a while now. I think it is going to scare some teams off just because of how extensive it is. I would not mind him as a fit for the Titans if he were to fall, but at 38, it'd be too rich for my blood.
Easton Freeze, host of the Hot Read podcast, Broadway Sports Media. We've talked a lot about the draft. The draft matters, of course. The draft is, you know, you try to find the best players. You try to set yourself up. But Easton, as far as I'm concerned, it comes down to the quarterback position. What are your thoughts currently as we head into year two of Will Levis?
We were speaking on the Hot Read podcast just the other day with quarterback coach Sean McAvoy, who is the personal quarterback coach from Malik Willis. But because of that, he does a lot of work with Will Levis as well, and so he spent a lot of time with him in the offseason, and we were talking through the progress that he's made and the things that he's working on, his mentality. Of course, it's a big deal for any quarterback going into their second year, especially a high-profile quarterback, to actually have that offseason and not have to do the draft circus. It's really the first time in like 19 months of those guys' lives that they have some free time to get in the lab, to work on the things they need to work on, and really just focus on training football. And so I think Will Levis did enough in his first year to warrant a year or two of a trial run. He obviously warranted going into the season as a starter. It was, I'd say, on the whole, above average football, but not a whole lot above average. There were a number of things that he flashed where you saw, okay, yeah, we can work with that. And there were a number of times that he did some things that you simply can't do on a football field. And there were also maybe more times than the actual mistakes he made, mistakes he almost made, and he got bailed out. There were a number. I mean, he had one of the highest turnover-worthy play rates of any quarterback in the league last year. Now, that's not surprising coming from a rookie and a guy that's a gunslinger and a guy that is in that position in particular where you have, like, one, you know, reliable target downfield. You don't have anybody blocking. Like, it's just a bad situation on the whole. Anybody can see that they watched. And so it's not shocking that as a rookie, not taking a lot of snaps in camp and, you know, coming in halfway through the season and trying to figure it out on the fly, that there was a lot of ups and downs. That being said, I do think that I don't think there's any doubt he has the requisite skill set to become a strong NFL quarterback. He's got to continue to nail down that footwork, cleaning up some mechanics. He's got an incredibly quick release. He's got an incredibly strong arm. The decision-making needs to get a little bit better. The accuracy could stand to improve. His pocket management and feel could also improve. Those are all things that he's working on in this off-season process. But the other thing that can go underrated is not only does he have the requisite skill set if he can polish those raw traits to be an NFL quarterback and a star, but he also has, between the ears, he's got exactly what you need. You could tell me that a year from now, 2 years from now, we find out that Will Levis physically, his play on the field, just it didn't end up cutting it, and I would believe you. But there is no doubt in my mind, and there's no doubt in the mind of anybody that I talk to that knows him and has worked with him personally, that he has what it takes between the ears from a personality standpoint, from a drive standpoint. The guy's a psychopath, and I mean that in the nicest possible way. He is driven. He's a natural leader. He's incredibly active, proactive in the way that he approaches the game, and he lives, eats, sleeps, breathes football, and that's what you want in your starting quarterback. So I think he's got a lot going for him. The Titans obviously have done a better job of putting a situation around him that's viable to, you know, develop and become a starting quarterback in the NFL, a bona fide starting quarterback, and he's going to have to take advantage of it. They just need to add some protection for him.
So if I'm asking you, over the next three drafts, including tomorrow night, do the Titans have to invest any more major capital in the quarterback position? You would say yes or no?
From a historical standpoint, I think the answer is yes, just because finding a starting quarterback in the NFL is really hard. But you can tell I'm not comfortable answering the question because
I think it's a coin flip. Really,
yeah, it feels 50-50 to me. It really does. And I don't think that's something that Titans fans should be disheartened by, because, you know, go through the league. How many teams are in a quarterback situation where they feel 50-50 they've got their franchise guy right now? It's a lot fewer than you think. I'm sure I'll be much more comfortable answering that question by Halloween, right? If we see six more games from this guy in a more modern quarterback-friendly offensive system with some more help around him, it feels like a question that is a really incomplete answer right now, because what we've seen from him is there's so many extenuating circumstances.
More important free agent signing, Lloyd Cushenberry or Calvin Ridley?
Lloyd Cushenberry was not a sexy addition, but listen, you know, as of right now, they don't have a starting tackle on either side of the ball, not one that you're comfortable with, and you need somebody other than Peter Skoronski that you can actually rely upon up front. So Lloyd Cushenberry being the center, being the quarterback of that offensive line right now, maybe playing a more important role in terms of keeping Will Levis on the field and making the offense functional. In terms of a force multiplier, Calvin Ridley can't be discounted, though, right? Because having DeAndre Hopkins and Calvin Ridley on the field together presents a significant problem for a defense. It's like when you go from having one kid to two kids, parents tell you that it's a big jump going from one to two as opposed to going from zero to one, because suddenly you got to split your attention, you've got to divide and conquer, and that's what defenses are going to have to do with Calvin Ridley and DeAndre Hopkins on the field. I think the presence of both of those guys is also going to open up opportunities for wide receivers down the depth chart who are going to be getting some tertiary attention out there. Treylon Burks, Kyle Phillips, Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, they could really take advantage of some of those situations. So Ridley is a strong player, and he's coming off of a year where he had 1,000 yards and 8 touchdowns, despite everybody, including himself, considering it a down year for him. If those numbers are a down year for him, I'm excited to see what a not-so-down, not-so-rusty year is from him with the Titans this year. So ultimately, to answer your question, I'll say in terms of the offense functioning, it's probably Lloyd Cushenberry. But in terms of the offense scoring, it's Calvin Ridley.
Hey, one more question that I have, and it's a tie-in when you talk about Ridley and the receiving core. Everything I'm looking at, and you've talked a little bit about that second-round pick, I see a lot of projections. I see all sorts of receiver names. I see Ladd McConkey. I see Adonai Mitchell. I see Keon Coleman. But you're of the mind that it's, well, maybe provisional because of what goes on in the first round, but it's you're of the mind that it's more of a defensive player, right? That's what you're projecting?
I would guess it's more likely to be a defensive player. Here's the deal. If they don't go tackle in the first round, I don't see any world in which they cannot go tackle in the second. If they come out of those top two picks, they don't trade back, number 7 and number 38 are something other than at least one tackle, Titans fans should start to panic. I don't know what the plan is there. I don't see that happening at all. So, assuming the first round is going to be a tackle, I think that opens up the opportunity for them to take a receiver in the second should they fall in love with one of these guys. It would not shock me if they loved, I think Ricky Pearsall is a really underrated player out of Florida who's going to go in the second round, has inside-outside versatility, just does everything really, really strongly, has a great catch radius and impressive at the catch point. So I could see him working in this Titans offense. A guy like Xavier Leggett, I could see them really being fond of. He's similar to Treylon Burks in his skill set, but I think that his ceiling might be a little bit higher. But in terms of receivers that are going to be available at 38, it's kind of a weird list. Like Ladd McConkey, I'll be surprised if he falls to 38. I think he's going to go before then. Adonai Mitchell, the same boat. I think he'll likely be a first-rounder, even though I think there are some red flags with him. I don't see Xavier Worthy as a guy that they would be particularly interested in. Obviously, that speed is really sexy, and it speed kills in the NFL. It can't hurt to have a guy that can fly like that. I know the Colts are very, very strongly into Xavier Worthy. It wouldn't shock me if they or somebody else ended up, the Dolphins, for example, Mike McDaniel loves some speed. Wouldn't shock me if somebody got really excited for him and overdrafted him a bit in the first round. I'm really not a fan of Troy Franklin out of Oregon. He has potential to be a true outside X receiver, big body, but he had a lot of catch troubles in college. I don't love his game, and watching him do some of the testing at the combine, the way that he runs, his game speed is slow. The way that he runs is kind of flimsy. He doesn't do it for me. Keon Coleman is a guy that I like a lot, but analytically speaking, he may be the most controversial player in this draft just because analytically. Kind of stinks. He's big and he's strong, but he's slow. His play speed is much stronger than his testing speed. So people like me that are a fan of him advocate for just let the guy play ball. I don't care about the numbers, but you do have to care about the numbers at some point. So I'd be kind of surprised if they loved Keon Coleman at 38. But yeah, it's kind of a dead zone for receivers, to be honest with you. I like more of the receivers in the third round, which again, they don't have a pick there, but if they were to trade and get a third round pick, would not shock me if they loved a Malachi Corley out of Western Kentucky, who's a shorter, more stout, yards-after-catch monster. Incredible once he has the ball in his hands. Javon Baker out of UCF, former Alabama wide receiver who has inside-outside versatility, is going to be a really fantastic player at the next level, I think, and a value for somebody in the third round. Malik Washington is like a poor man, Zay Flowers, who I know Rand Carthen was awfully fond of in the first round last year, even though the Titans didn't end up drafting him. He was the entirety of Virginia's offense last year. He'll be available in the third round. Even Jermaine Burton, a really controversial name, wide receiver out of Alabama, who has first-round talent on the field from a pure talent standpoint, may very well be wide receiver 4 or 5 in this class. But off the field, every team he's ever been around has told people in no uncertain terms, don't touch this guy with a 10-foot pole. So where he ends up going, I don't know, but I'd imagine somebody is going to say, we can't turn down the potential in this kid in round 3 or 4, so he's another guy that's there. But generally speaking, yeah, the second-round receiver, it's a possibility for the Titans, and they may feel it's a need, and they may feel that they love one of the guys that's there. But generally speaking, I'm not a huge fan of the crop of guys that are available.
Easton Freeze, great stuff. You brought it. You made us smarter. Subscribe to the Hot Read podcast. Give him a follow on X at Easton Freeze. On the way out, I just want one word answer. You're in the GM room. Number 7 comes up. Joe Alt, or you could trade back to number 12 and grab a couple extra picks. You taking Alt or you trading? One word.
Trade. So easy. No thought.
Appreciate the time, brother.
Hey, thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Easton.
Sam, that same scenario. Trade back to 12, taking Joe Alt at 7.
I think I might trade back too. I mean, grabbing a left tackle in these days in football is a hot commodity, and you know that may be one move that kind of comes back to bite you in the ass. But I do, you know, I do kind of agree with him. I think that there are some holes with this team, and I think you've got the best offensive line coach in football, and you know they've talked about how deep of a class that this offensive tackle class is. If they feel confident in some of the deeper guys, I think I'd be fine trading back. I want that round three pick.
I've got some data about offensive lines in the NFL.
Yeah, they're all first round picks.
I got some other data though that I want to talk about after the break. Stick with us.